Support for Yale Cancer Answers comes from AstraZeneca, a biopharmaceutical business that is pushing the boundaries of science to deliver new cancer medicines. More information at AstraZeneca-US.com. Welcome to Yale Cancer Answers with Drs. Anish Chagpar and Stephen Gore. I'm Bruce Barber. Yale Cancer Answers features the latest information on cancer care by welcoming oncologists and specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer. This week, it's a conversation about liver cancer with Dr. Mario Strazzabosco. Dr. Strazzabosco is a professor of oncology and gastroenterology at Yale School of Medicine. And Dr. Gore is a professor of internal medicine and hematology at Yale and director of hematologic malignancies at Smilow Cancer Hospital.
It's great to have you back on the show. I was feeling like we did an interview with you just a few weeks ago, but it turns out it's been over a year.
Yes, indeed.
Wow. So the first thing I'd like to talk about, and I think we've probably touched base before about this, is just to clear up for our listeners. You often hear, oh, my mother had breast cancer, but then she died of liver cancer, or my father had colon cancer, but he died of liver cancer. And that's not really correct for the most part. Is that right?
Well, we are talking here about primary liver cancer. You are referring to examples of what is called metastatic liver cancer or secondary liver cancer.
Right.
In this case, the liver is actually pretty healthy.
Right. So it's really not liver cancer. It's really the other cancer, which is spread.
Yeah, a spread, metastatic spread of other liver cancer. Of course, the liver is in, is filtering all the venous blood.
Right,
so several places, so it's very easy
for the cancer cells to settle there.
Right, right.
But that's not what you study, right?
No, no. What we study and treat is actually primary liver cancer, so cancer that originates in the liver.
I see. So what kind of patients get that?
Well, there are two kind of cancer that originates in the liver, one more frequent than the other. The less frequent is called the cholangiocarcinoma, and that's a cancer that can happen in any patient. There are a few risk factors, but it's rare. The other, which keeps quite busy, I have to say, is the so-called hepatocellular carcinoma, or also called hepatoma, or HCC.
Okay.
This is a cancer that actually has several risk factors. The most frequent one is chronic liver disease. So it's a cancer that we find in patients that have some sort of advanced liver disease. That's in the most frequent case. Most of the time, these patients have viral hepatitis,
mm-hmm.
Hepatitis B, hepatitis C, or they have a history of drinking.
Mm-hmm. Alcohol.
Alcohol, or they have some genetic diseases of the liver that anyway brings to chronic liver disease and cirrhosis. Or, and this is something which is becoming epidemiologically more and more important, they are obese or they are diabetics. And most of the time, it is important to recognize that there are a combination of factors. It's not only one factor. A patient may be infected by hepatitis B or C virus, but in addition to that, he doesn't know it, and so he lives a regular life, drinking during the weekend or smoking, and he's obese. He's overweight.
Sounds like most of America, right?
Well, this is one thing that America do, which is good. We drink a lot of coffee, and coffee apparently is good for the liver.
Oh, well, then I'm in good shape. And I don't smoke.
Right.
Now, aren't viral hepatitis diseases treatable nowadays?
Yeah. One important message that I would like to deliver is that most liver diseases are preventable and treatable.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, your question is about viral hepatitis, and yes, there are two major viruses that can cause chronic liver disease. One is hepatitis virus B, and this can be suppressed. We have very effective pills that can keep the virus at bay.
But doesn't cure it.
The virus is there. Mm. It cures the disease. Because the patient gets a dramatic improvement, actually, under this treatment. It cures the disease, doesn't really reduces the risk of cancer if you treat the patient when he's already cirrhotic. If you treat the patient before cirrhosis, the risk of cancer is reduced. But you know, hepatitis B is an oncogenic cancer, so it's an oncogenic virus, integrates in the genome.
Yeah, you mean it causes cancer per se?
Yeah, it causes cancer per se. And so there are populations in which you can get the virus very early in life, in which you can actually have liver cancer in the absence of a relevant liver disease.
Mm. And what about hepatitis C?
So hepatitis C, it's causing liver cancer through other mechanisms, mostly inflammation, regeneration, and the liver try to repair. And, you know, on a history of 30 years, there are several mutations that accumulate slowly and so on. So hepatitis C now is curable. There are very effective drugs that can be administered to the patient, short-term treatment now.
I see a lot of commercials where the people look very happy and they're sending balloons in the sky.
Right. Well, yeah. So that's
well, that's good, right?
Yeah. Let's talk about this. So you can. It's extremely effective, and also collateral effects are really negligible.
You mean side effects?
Yeah, the side effects. I mean, I remember the times in which we were giving interferon.
Terrible. That's a terrible drug.
It was a terrible drug, and initially cured 20% of the patients.
And they felt like they had the flu all the time.
Exactly. And then slowly. But this drugs are clearly a magic treatment revolution. However, some disappointments. The fact that the risk of developing liver cancer if you are treated when you are cirrhotic is not zeroed.
Is not.
No, it's decreased, but it's still present mm-hmm. and sizable. We see many hepatocellular carcinomas in patients that have been successfully treated with these new drugs. That doesn't mean that the drug favors the cancer,
mm-hmm.
but simply that either the treatment was too late
mm-hmm.
or that we're simply taking care of one of the risk factors.
But not the other.
Most of the time, these patients are also diabetics, or they may be obese, or they may be drinking. And, you know, we fool ourselves thinking, okay, the virus is gone, the patient will not have cancer, whereas we need to realize that we need to treat the patient is in entirety. I mean, the whole spectrum of risk factor needs to be addressed by the treating physician. So, you know, I mean, we need them to have a good control of diabetes. We need to have to reduce their metabolic syndrome risk factors. So, you know, which are the same cardiac disease.
Right.
Interestingly.
What does cirrhosis mean?
Cirrhosis means that the liver, after a long fight against an offending agent, try to contain it. But by doing that, it shows the scar of the battle.
Hmm.
And so the liver, rather than remaining a sponge, which is easily perfused, it becomes like a more rocky fibrous tissue mm-hmm. where in which the perfusion is less effective, but also it needs to have a higher venous pressure and so on. So the cirrhosis is usually a combination of cell death, cell regeneration, and fibrosis.
Now, does everyone who has cirrhosis know that they have cirrhosis?
Unfortunately, not.
Hmm.
cirrhosis may remain clinically silent for many, many years. Mm. In fact, we pathologists distinguish compensated liver cirrhosis and decompensated liver cirrhosis.
Uh-huh.
Decompensated is when some of the complication may show up, you know, like ascites, yellow discoloration of the skin, encephalopathy.
Confusion.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Confusion, kidney failure.
These are really sick people.
Yes, and hematemesis, so vomiting blood. These are very sick people that need immediate transplantation if possible. Okay,
right.
But most of the interest now is actually in what to do before that stage, because mm-hmm. when you reach that stage again, you either have a liver transplant or we can do a lot for you, but your survival is limited.
I see. So, you know, I know many good primary care physicians are screening, especially the baby boomers seem to be at high risk for hepatitis C. You'll have to tell me why, but I know there people are being screened, and if it's found, I guess they're getting treated. Yeah. But how would they know if they have cirrhosis or not? Right. Do the doctors screen for that?
Not really. So you have several conditions in which you may present to your primary care physician, right? One is you are a baby boomer, so you live through the 68.
I see.
And several.
You might have ingested things or...
Yeah, you may have avoided several of the promiscuous risk factors of the 60s and so on. And then
that didn't happen in Italy.
No. And of course, in the U.S., the guidelines is actually to screen for hepatitis viruses, this population of patients. Then if you turn out to be positive, surely your doctor will at least run a set of liver lab and an ultrasound.
Mm-hmm.
A well-done ultrasound should already give you several information on whether or not your liver is... already cirrhotic or not.
Hmm.
You can then be referred to a hepatology center. They'll use a elastography.
Elastography? What is that?
The elastography is a machine that looks like an ultrasound, but it sort of give a flick on your liver.
Yeah.
And measure how hard it is.
Yeah, that sounds like it hurts.
Well, you know, no, it doesn't hurt, but one thing is knocking on a mattress, one thing is knocking on a wood.
Okay.
Okay? You hear a different sound,
I
don't
see.
You?
God, well, that's true.
Okay, so this little machine basically records
this
elastic wavelength. And if your elasticity is not enough, it'll show you a resistance, basically, and they're cut off.
Mm.
On those cut off, you are in the so-called cirrhotic or pre-cirrhotic phase.
Hmm. Well, we're going to have to talk about that in a minute, because I don't want you banging on my liver. But right now, and I don't want you asking me what I was doing in the 60s either. Right now, we're going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more about liver cancer with Dr. Mario Stratovosco.
Support for Yale Cancer Answers comes from AstraZeneca, a leader in oncology research with four new FDA-approved medicines in the last 3 years. Learn more at AstraZeneca-US.com. This is a medical minute about colorectal cancer. When detected early, colorectal cancer is easily treated and highly curable. And as a result, it's recommended that men and women over the age of 50 have regular colonoscopies to screen for the disease. Tumor gene analysis has helped improve management of colorectal cancer by identifying the patients most likely to benefit from chemotherapy and newer targeted agents, resulting in more patient-specific treatments. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to Connecticut Public Radio.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Answers. This is Dr. Stephen Gore. I'm joined tonight by my guest, Dr. Mario Stratovosco, and we are discussing the surveillance and treatment of liver cancer. Mario, before the break, you were telling me that that in patients who are found to have, say, a hepatitis virus, they'll usually have an ultrasound in this scan, which measures the firmness or texture of the liver. If somebody has a positive result on this ultrasound test, then what happens?
So if a patient has a positive result in the fiber scan or is diagnosed with suspicious advanced liver disease or cirrhosis, the important thing is to understand that he has to undergo a so-called surveillance for hepatocellular carcinoma. So every patient with cirrhosis has a risk of developing hepatocellular carcinoma. 5% of our patient with cirrhosis will show up every year with liver cancer.
5% per year.
Yeah, and so if after 10 years, it's right. A good size of a patient. We have a lot of possible approaches to cancer that are small.
Small cancers.
Yeah, small. By small, we mean less than 5 centimeter in size.
Okay, and, well, that's pretty big.
Yeah. And better if they're less than 2.
Okay.
So how do we pick them up? By doing an ultrasound every 6 months.
Every 6 months?
Yes, because 6 months is more or less the doubling size of the tumor.
I see.
So the guidelines internationally, they recommend 6 months ultrasound. Now, there are differences in the way ultrasounds are done throughout the world and so on and so forth. So there are some countries that add alpha-fetoprotein.
This is a blood test.
Yes, that is a biomarker mm-hmm. of a possible hepatocellular carcinoma. The problem is not everybody is positive for that, actually a minority of patients.
Not all the patients with liver cancer have that problem.
Right, actually less than 30%. Uh-huh. And you need to monitor the growth of the biomarker during the time. So. Basically, ultrasound every 6 months plus alpha-fetoprotein determination. That has been shown to be effective. Mm-hmm. There are data that shows a meta-analysis that show that the patients that are undergoing diligently a surveillance will have increased survival and increase chances to have the tumor diagnosed at an early phase.
Hmm. And what happens then if the tumor is diagnosed early?
Right. What happens is that we have a lot of things to offer.
Okay.
Okay, which our usual, the way we go through it during the tumor board is we resect if the patient can be resected.
Surgery.
Yeah, surgical resection, and not all of them can because there is portal hypertension, there are strict criteria that are associated with a good survival after resection, or with a dismayed prognosis because of decompensation. Okay, the patient that cannot be resected, then you start considering whether or not they are transplant candidates.
For liver transplants?
Yes, because hepatoma is the only solid tumor that can be transplanted.
Wow.
But up to certain stage.
Okay.
So we can transplant patient. I don't want to go into the
sure.
detail, but the message is early cancer can be transplanted.
Mm.
Okay. And then we need to understand how long is the waiting time. And
sure.
So
finding
we'll
the right organ.
We'll do what we can in order to keep the tumor at bay while we wait. And this is mostly achieved through interventional radiology.
Uh-huh.
Approaches. Interventional radiology has been a major factor in the improvement in the prognosis.
So what do they do?
There are several ways in which they can address the tumor. If the tumor is still relatively small, they can use ablation technologies.
Mm-hmm.
So they insert a probe and then can use some radio frequency wavelength to, let's say, cook it.
They're zapping it.
Yeah. Or they use cryoablation.
Cold. That's
the,
cold.
Yeah, that's the cold.
Freezing it.
Exactly.
You can cook it. You can freeze it.
You can freeze it. You can use microwave, like microwave.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, it's truly disgusting.
But I'll never eat in the microwave again.
But it's actually extremely, extremely effective.
Huh.
And if there's not such a possibility because of the tumor is too big, because of the location of the tumor is close to certain vessels or certain other organs, then they can use interarterial approaches. So they will go through arteriography, they will reach the hepatic artery and go as much as possible close to the feeding artery
okay.
of the tumor, because the interesting thing is this tumor are highly vascularized. And on the contrary to the normal liver, which has a venous vascularization, they actually have an arterial vascularization.
Okay.
So that can be embolized, blocking the feeding of the tumor, can
wow.
be embolized and also treated with high concentration of chemotherapeutic agents. Or you can add some beads that contain a radioactive compound, yttrium-90, and so you sort of concentrate radioactivity in the tumor.
Huh.
So these are effective approaches. The problem is that they don't cure the cirrhosis,
mm-hmm.
and this cancer unfortunately comes back.
I see.
So 60 to 70% of the patient experience a recurrence in the 18 months following the first treatment.
I see.
So what we do actually in our center, we follow them every 3 months
sure.
with imaging, and we go back again, and every time is like the first time. We go through the whole possibility of treatment. We see what we can do. And by doing that, which is called multi-modal
approaches
and tailoring of the treatment and repeating the treatment several times.
Mm-hmm.
We go on until we can transfer the patient or if the patient is not a transplant candidate, until the liver function can sustain the treatment. Now, the novelty, if you want, is that in the last 10 years and more recently, there are targeted molecular approaches that are being used.
Drugs.
There are drugs that like TKA inhibitors, that blocks intracellular signaling molecules that are important
mm-hmm.
for that. At least three of them are now in the market, and now also, of course, everybody is very interested in understanding what the role will be of immunotherapy
mm-hmm.
on that.
Gotcha.
Recent trials show the possibility of adding immunotherapy after the patient has been treated with TKI inhibitor. So it's a scenario which is changing dramatically.
Sure.
And maybe in the future we'll try to expand the indication for medical treatment rather than using interventional approaches until the end.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a changing world on that, but it's too early to predict.
Got it. And in the patients who successfully have a transplant, what are the chances of the cancer coming back? Or
yeah, there is unfortunately the chance of the cancer coming back after a transplant, even 2 years after the transplant.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fascinating biological question. But the protocols that we use to identify the patient that can be transplanted is based on staging, but let's say that minimizes the chance of transplant of recurrence. So less than 10% of them will experience a recurrence if you use stringent criteria.
If meaning that the people have earlier, smaller disease, or
And there is of course the tendency to expand.
You know,
the pool, because of course, you know, now it's like saying you have to have a predicted survival of 70% at 5 years. But 65% survival with a malignant disease is fantastic anyway, right?
Right.
So there are attempts at expanding this criteria, but it's like a colleague of mine says, it's like a metro ticket, okay? The faster you go, the more you pay. And so it's being this, being a liver graft and very rare commodity.
Sure, there's not too many livers around.
Exactly. So it's imperative to wait to weigh what is the best indication between oncologic indication or other indication for liver disease. That's always the
tension.
Yeah, the tension and the discussion. And but I say we do a pretty good job with several iteration and you know.
So if somebody's found to have earlier stage liver disease and they stop their risk factors, so let's say they've got their hepatitis C treated and they've stopped smoking, and if there's alcohol, maybe they stop drinking, can the liver fix itself at that stage?
There is a, we used to think that cirrhosis is irreversible. What we learn with treatment of hepatitis B and C is that that's not completely the case, but there is a point in which the cirrhosis does not reverse. Okay, it's easier to identify this point clinically. So, for example, we published a paper showing that if you use the new antivirals. And the MELD score, MELD is a way we give a number to how sick the liver patient is, okay? If the MELD score is around 20, which is in the middle, the patient can actually clinically revert. I'm not saying pathologically.
They get better.
Get much better. Above that, he'll still need to be transplanted. The same is true for alcoholic liver disease.
Alcoholic liver?
Yeah, you know, when we have this 6 month rule, so the patient needs to wait 6 months before being transplanted. And one of the reasons is, first of all, you have to make sure it's not going to go back and drinking, but the other reason is that it may improve on itself.
Oh, I see.
So it can significantly improve.
And then you don't want to have to do the transplant.
But the people that do not improve by 3-4 months, they'll have cirrhosis, which is shrinking the liver, and there's no way you can regenerate from that. You can't come back from that point. So there is the possibility to revert. And certainly, if you do have liver cancer, make sure you address all your risk factors.
Of course, yeah.
Because that, anyway, help us. Because in order to provide you with as many treatments as possible, you have to have a good liver function. Also, for the new medical treatments and new agents, you know, the studies are all, made always in patients with very well conserved the liver function, and the tolerability is better. So, yeah, treat your liver very well.
Dr. Mario Strazzavosco is a professor of oncology and gastroenterology at Yale School of Medicine. If you have questions, the address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and past editions of the program are available in audio and written form at yalecancercenter.org. I'm Bruce Barber, reminding you to tune in each week to learn more about the fight against cancer here on Connecticut Public Radio.